This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. We usually have this gentleman on Monday, but because Monday is a holiday, and yet that's game one, I wanted to get an in-depth preview on Bruins and Blues, and who better to do it with than the guy that we've been talking to all year long, and that's EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. How are you, buddy?
I am good, Don. How you doing, buddy?
I'm looking forward to this. I mean, listen, Sharks-Bruins would have been interesting from the Joe Thornton standpoint, but I think this Blues story is terrific. Worst team in the National Hockey League on January 3rd and have been the best team since then. Boston's year was really obscured by how good Tampa was all year, but I think clearly Boston was the second-best team in the league all year long. They've been great during the course of the playoffs. I think this is a fantastic final.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great storylines, and it's been terrific. You know, the St. Louis story with the team being in last place in the league as the calendar turned over to 2019 and to go on this run, and Jordan Binnington, who was spent last season in Providence with the Bruins farm team as a guy that was loaned to the Boston Bruins organization.
Right.
Due to a number of different circumstances, because the Blues did not have their own AHL affiliate last season. They were splitting one, and they only had one goalie they could put there. And so the Jordan Binnington story is kind of crazy. I mean, he was asked by the Blues to go to take an assignment to the ECHL, and he refused. And that's how he ended up with the Providence Bruins last year. And then this year, I mean, there's a goaltender in the Blues organization named Billy Husso, and he is the guy that they figured would be the guy to get the next opportunity once they came to the realization that Jake Allen was just not consistent enough to get it done. But Husso got injured, and that opened the door for Binnington getting the chance. And Binnington was really good last year in Providence, and he was good this year at the start of the year for San Antonio, which is the Blues minor league spot now. And you know, so the door opened for him, and boy, talk about opportunity and taking advantage of it. He really did.
Yeah, and I keep going back to conversations we had earlier in the year where you like the Blues team. And
yeah,
you said this is a really good team, and the only question is, do they have a goaltender? And now it looks like they have one. And now I think that it's, you forget about worst team in January 3rd. I mean, right now you look at their team and the way, Jaden Schwartz is playing, the way that Tarasenko played, I think, in that series against San Jose, the blue line coming together, the depth they have in the blue line, with Dunn getting hurt, Bortuzzo coming in, and then the goaltending. I mean, there's no reason to believe they can't play with the Bruins. I think the Bruins are probably better because they've been more consistent like all year long. But we're going to break it down here in this podcast. Just doing the homework myself, I think this is a lot closer than people might think. I mean, forget about who's hot, who's not. I mean, from a roster standpoint, these teams are very close.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I think, you know, when you look at it, I give the Bruins kind of a little advantages in all the important areas that
right.
I look at, but they're very small advantages in a league that's already really close. And so, you know, you play a 7-game series this week, you play a 7-game series 2 weeks from now, the result could be totally different just because that's the nature of competition when the teams are so close. I mean, it could come down to a puck going off the handle of a stick of one of the goaltenders, or a puck deflecting off a skate and going in or not going in. So, I mean, I expect it to be tight. I'll be curious to see how things are at the start of the series, because the Bruins will have had 11 days off, basically, since they last played in sweeping Carolina. Historically speaking, and we've seen it in this playoffs this year. I mean, the Islanders had time off, they were swept. The Canes had time off, they were swept. Teams that have had a lot of time off, usually they kind of fall out of their rhythm. They fall out of their mojo. Guys who are injured, they heal. But when you heal, you don't want to necessarily get hurt again. You know, sometimes it's better to play with that nagging injury that you can get treatment for and you're managing and you're playing through than when you get completely healed and you're not interested necessarily in getting injured again or having that wound, reopen, so to speak. So I'll be curious to see how the start is for the Bruins. And on the flip side, for the Blues, they've been excellent on the road in these playoffs. And so you put those two things together, the Bruins may be looking to find their game early in the series, and the Blues being a good road team, that could give St. Louis a leg up early on. And then you're talking about a really long battle.
Now let's talk about the rest. As you said, 10 days for the Bruins and then, but five for the Blues. So does that kind of balance things out? Cause usually we see the long layoff and it's much shorter for the other team. Maybe 2 days, 3 days, but by wrapping things up in game six, EJ, they've got some significant rest too. So the rust versus rest factor is a little bit more balanced than it might have been in previous finals.
It's a little more balanced, but I would say this. I think St. Louis has only got really one more day than they would have wanted because they have to travel. So, you know, they finish that game on Tuesday night. There's a day of celebration. There's a day to kind of get back to it. Like, if they could travel today and play, you know, have a media day and play Sunday, that might have been the best case scenario for them. As it is, it's an extra day, so they've got to, you know, fill that time. So it evens it out a little bit. But Boston, I mean, I can't remember the last day. I mean, if you tell me when it was the last time Boston played, I haven't really had to think about what day it was.
Okay, it was a Wednesday.
Not long ago.
So I think it was a week ago Wednesday.
I mean, that's a lot. I mean,
it's almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time. So, you know, they're going to have to, I mean, they're doing whatever they can. They had the big scrimmage last night at TD Garden to a lot of people, raised a lot of money for charity. They're trying to do things to kind of get themselves ready. I'm sure once they get into, we start drop the puck and we start playing, then it's a matter of time before they kind of find their way. But I just, again, I go back, I've been watching this a long time, so have you, Don. I mean, you can remember the 2003 Devils team that won the Stanley Cup and beat the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. That Anaheim team had a lot of time off. They came east to play the Devils, and I think they got shut out in both games.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then they went back to Anaheim, and they kind of started to find their way back in the series, and it became a homer series where Anaheim just couldn't win in New Jersey, and the Devils won in seven. But, you know, over time, the team that's had a substantial rest, usually it's a struggle for them. So, we'll see if St. Louis can take advantage of that early. I think they have to in the series. If they don't, let's say Boston comes out and gets games one and game two, I think it's going to be hard. You'd be hard pressed to now have St. Louis go home and then win four of the next five games. So, you know, the early part of the series, I think, will be really interesting. We'll see what kind of matchups these coaches want. And I can tell you this, they played two regular season games. The second one was Rask versus Binnington in St. Louis, and it was one of the best regular season games I watched all year. It was a Saturday afternoon game. It went to a shootout. The Blues ended up winning. Both teams were missing a couple of guys that are healthy and going now, namely for the Bruins, David Pastrnak. So if the game is anything like that game was back in late February, then we're in for a really interesting series.
Now, let's start with the forwards. Two of the best top lines you can find at the NHL, right? I mean, Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, I mean, great all year. And I thought Pastrnak got better as the playoffs went on. He was kind of a no-show in the Toronto series, and I thought he was much better over the last couple of rounds. And, you know, outside of really being shut out in Game 6, EJ, Jaden Schwartz has just been unbelievable. Scored more goals in the postseason than he did in the regular season. And with Tarasenko and Shen, these are two really good top lines. And you could make the case, because of the way the Blues' fourth line is playing, they might be more well-rounded and deeper forward-wise than Boston. Is that a stretch?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a stretch at all. I think it's very close. I mean, you know me. You've been working with me for a long time. You know my feelings about this game is that, like, you know, down the middle is really important, your centers. When I think of forwards, I think of the centers. And this is, you know, you think of the Bruins with Bergeron, Krejci, Coyle, and Kuraly. I mean, that's a nicely slotted group of four with someone that I would say is an elite number one at the top of the list in Patrice Bergeron. Now, on the flip side, you've got the St. Louis Blues, and they've got Shen and O'Reilly. You've got Bozak as your third center, and you've got Sundqvist as your fourth. I think that's a really nice group of four centers. The only difference I would say is that I think that there's not that elite guy in that group, whereas I do think Boston has one of those elite guys in Bergeron. So it's really close. I think I think your assessment is accurate that if you go all the way through the whole 12 forwards, you might want to even give St. Louis a little edge, but I weigh the centers a little differently.
Yeah.
So I would say Boston, and particularly because that top line, that's probably the best line in hockey when you think about all they do. Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand. So I would give the Bruins a slight edge, but it's not a big edge because they're both four-line teams, and they're getting production from really all 12 forwards. And, you know, for Boston, they'll run Nolachari in for Chris Wagner, who's been hurt was hurt in the last series. I don't think there'll be a huge drop-off, but Chris Wagner has been a really good player for the Bruins, so I think they'll miss him being out.
And blue line, I probably give the advantage to Boston. But there's still some really good players on defense there for the Blues. And we saw Bortuzzo come in. He scored a huge goal. I think it was in game four of the series. Assess how you think you would break down the blue line.
Well, I think, you know, it depends what you like, Donnie. I think if you like the mobile defender, I think you give the edge to the Bruins because they have a little bit more mobility in their group. If you like the heavier, bigger, stronger defense, then I think you probably give St. Louis the edge, which is funny to say when you know, Boston has the likes of Daniel Char, and they also have Carlo, who is another big kid. But outside of that, they've got four smaller puck-moving type guys, and I like those players, but again, it depends what you like is when you're breaking it down. If you like the mobile defense, then you probably like the Bruins a little better. If you like the bigger, tougher defense, you like the Blues. Now, the Blues could insert Vince Dunn back in if he gets healthy. That gives them a little bit more jump, a little bit more of a puck-moving ability by an individual skater. So if the series unfolds in one way, they might look to put him back in. You know, on the Boston side, they've got the kid Miller, who's been out for a good while now, but, you know, there's some talk that he might be getting close to being able to return. He's a heavier defender, so if Boston feels like they need to add that to the mix, if Miller can go, he might be a guy that jumps in. Again, I go back to the same thing. I think it's really close, but for me, I give Boston a very slight, the slightest of edges on the whole of their group.
And in goal, it's hard not to say Rask, right? He's been there. He's done that. I think he's got the history. And he's red hot, too, right? As good as Binnington has been, I mean, Rask probably has been better. So I think the goaltending advantage definitely goes to Boston.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, Rask has been, you know, what can you say? He's been so good. And he has been through it. He's been to a Stanley Cup final in 2013, albeit in a losing effort, six games to the Chicago Blackhawks. His what save percentage in that six-game series was .932, so that's pretty darn good. You know, he also went to the Cup Final in 2011 with the Bruins. He was behind Jimmy Thomas, who was sensational in that run for the Boston Bruins. So Tuukka Rask understands this time of year. He's been there a couple times. Jordan Binnington, you know, has not. But Jordan Binnington has shown at every turn that he is very capable and very calm. And his demeanor is such that, you know, he understands the situation. And I don't think he'll be bothered. Like he says, you know, do I look nervous? I mean, I don't think he does. So, I you know, but when you got to weigh it like we do in this business and you look at it, you got to, at the start here, you'd have to say Rask has the edge because of that experience and because he's been playing well. But, you know, if at the end of the series we look back and we say, boy, Jordan Binnington outplayed Tuukka Rask, would we be surprised?
No, you can't be.
I don't think so.
And I think it's going to be fun. I've got Boston in six. What do you have?
Yeah, I'm going to go Boston in seven. But, you know, I think the first two games of the series are critical, like I said, because, you know, Boston having been out for a while, I just don't think they're going to be at the top of their game as we start the series on Monday. I think it's going to take a little time to get there. St. Louis has been really good on the road. They're feeling it right now in St. Louis. They're probably there's a lot of belief in that room. So if they can get one of those first two games in Boston and come back at even, you know, I think we're looking at a really long series. I mean, something else to consider in this whole thing too is the special teams for the Bruins. Their power play is the top power play in the playoffs, 34% first overall. Their penalty killing, fourth best of the 16 playoff teams, 86.3%. Those numbers on both sides are excellent. St. Louis not as good, ninth on the power play, 19.4%, although it's come to life a little bit in the last couple against San Jose. The penalty killing, 78%, 11th amongst playoff teams, not going to be near good enough if it continues at that level, and especially if Boston continues to produce on the power play. But all those numbers go into one other factor, is how are these games going to be officiated? Because if they are games where they just sort of let them play, that, I think, plays into the advantage of the St. Louis Blues because they'll be able to take liberties physically and they won't have to worry about the Boston Bruins being on six or seven or eight power plays in the game. So it always comes back to how things are officiated. And my, you know, when I look back on the history of this thing in Stanley Cup final play, I would say there'll be less penalties than more, but we'll see.
Well, we saw that the Blues really turned it on physically, right? I mean, they were not hitting a lot of people in the first two rounds, but in that conference final, man, they were hitting sometimes in games 10, 12 more times than they had on the average. I think they were averaging like under 25 hits per game. They were up in the 40s at times in the conference final game against San Jose. Now, maybe that's because they smelled blood and they saw there was a lot of banged up players for the Sharks they could take advantage of. Does that strategy work against Boston, or did it go back to the way they played early?
I think that they did that because they saw a Sharks team that was really playing 4.5D. When you think about it, I mean, Carlson was playing, but he was injured, and they were trying to really work him physically. And they didn't really play their 6D that much, Joachim Ryan, a Jersey kid, until they really had to, right? So they were already playing short back there just by coach's decision, and they really were more of a three-line team than a four-line team. And so I think St. Louis looked at it and was probably like, you know, these guys have been through a lot in two rounds. They're playing, you know, this is like kind of a 15-man lineup as opposed to an 18. Let's get on them physically, and it really paid off for them. When I look at them against the Bruins are going to play their 6D and they're going to play four lines, so it's going to be a little different. That said, the Bruins, with their current configuration on defense, four of their six defenders are smaller guys. Or average to smaller size guys, and that might be something that the Blues try to target and get in on those guys and make their lives a little more uncomfortable than they're used to.
All right, a few things before we get to the tweets. I threw this out a couple of days ago. I don't know if it's fair, unfair, just my observation. Eric Carlson's a free agent, and whoever signs him is thinking, hey, I'm going to win a Stanley Cup with this guy, right? I mean, that's a significant piece to add to your team.
Yeah.
The two times he's made runs, with Ottawa in 2017 and now with San Jose this year, he's had nothing left by the end of it. Now, is that just coincidence that he just happened to get hurt, or is this someone that you'd have to fear that over four rounds, 20 playoff games, he can wear himself down to where what do you have in Eric Carlson at the most pivotal time of the season?
Well, I think the biggest part of it is just the injuries. And I think any team that is going to sign Eric Carlson better have the full medical on him. And I mean, San Jose has got an advantage there because they've had him for a full year. They've been through the whole thing with him. They understand where he's at physically, and they will be in a position to really understand that, right? Whereas everyone else will have to go out and do their due diligence and get those medical reports and try to figure things out. How significant is that groin/core injury? How is that foot injury that he had in the past, is that in the past? Or is that something that still could be a lingering problem for him moving forward? So, I think it's a big question mark. I mean, this is someone that's going to command or looking to command a significant contract. And, he's a hard guy to read. So it's hard to know if he really has any desire to stay in San Jose, or if he's someone that wants to come back east. I know Tampa's been mentioned a number of times. They would have to make make some significant decisions with the rest of their lineup to make that work financially. So I think it's a buyer beware type situation with Eric Carlson. I mean, he's a terrific offensive defenseman. There is no question about that. I don't think he defends well even when he's completely healthy, so you have to live with that. Which you can if he's healthy and doing what he does, from a standpoint of offensive production. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the market looks like for Carlson.
Kessel, where do you think he ends up when Pittsburgh deals him away?
That's a great question. I mean, there's talk about Minnesota has come up now. I mean, Minnesota needs goals, right? So that's why they would consider that. I think for Pittsburgh, it would be a great trade to get a guy like Zucker, who's a really speed player and is a scorer, and could kind of be a nice addition to the Penguins. I know that Kessel has had his back and forth with Mike Sullivan over the last couple of years. The thing they missed in Pittsburgh in terms of some of the players, of dealing with some of the players, is Rick Tocchet. He was kind of a buffer for Mike Sullivan with players like Kessel and Malkin. And, with him out of the picture and having moved on to Arizona as the head coach there, the relationship has been a little more strained, and when you haven't won in the last 2 years, right? I mean, it's the team that lost in the second round last year, lost in the first round this year. It's not quite as easy to overlook some of the things that bother you about particular players. So I think Jimmy Rutherford does want to shake it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Kessel is definitely somebody that can be on the move. When you think about the Penguins, they don't have a ton coming, and they don't have really a lot of draft picks there. So the window is still now with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. So they're trying to be better in the now, and they don't have a lot of chips to play. So Kessel is probably one of them. If they can get a Zucker, he could be a good fit there. But Phil has got the, you know, his contract, I believe. He's got teams that he can control whether or not he wants to be traded to those teams. And I believe Minnesota, from what I understand, is a team that he would have to agree to go to. And so that's something that the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Minnesota Wild would have to try to work out. But, certainly Phil plays. He's played every game. He plays for injuries. He scores goals. He plays big in big moments. There's a lot to like, I think, about Phil Kessel, but he's a little bit of a different cat. And you have to understand what you're getting.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think it would be a good fit in Minnesota. You know, just they can use some goals there, and he definitely is an elite scorer. So maybe he'll waive the no-trade clause to Minnesota, and we'll see what happens there during the offseason.
My only problem for Minnie is I just don't see him being that close. And
true.
So for me, I would rather hold on to to Zucker. And, I mean, the other components of it were Jack Johnson going that way and then Brass coming the other way. And I think that's two teams looking to move contracts that they're not happy with. So, you know, Minnesota, it's an interesting situation there. They've got Parisi and Suter, who are older players on huge contracts that are only halfway through, believe it or not. And so that is an interesting dynamic. You have a new general manager there. They definitely need to figure out ways to improve their offense. But as is adding a 32 or 33-year-old Phil Kessel to the mix at this point, the fix you're looking for,
That's a good point.
You know, I don't know. I just don't know. Right. I'll be honest with you, I have no idea where Minnesota is right now because they've got those two guys there on long-term deals. They got a good goaltender. They got a couple of good young players. But, you know, are they a team that's a now team, or are they a team that's got to build for the future? I don't really know.
Here's the problem with them. They're just in the wrong division. Right,
because you've got
Nashville, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Colorado. Now looks like they're moving up. I mean, so you can improve your team and still have to be battling for a wild card. Maybe if they were in the Pacific Division, I'd say there's a chance to be in the top three and make the playoffs. But I don't see themselves. I see Minnesota being exactly what they were last year—a team battling for the seventh or eighth seed.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the big picture what they're looking for there. So, and when you have two players that you really can't trade, really. I mean, you can't trade Parisi and you can't trade Suter. And it's nothing about, I love Zach going back to his time with New Jersey, and he gives you everything he's got. He's had a lot of injuries. I thought last year he played well when he was healthy. I thought he played very well when he was healthy. Suter's a good defenseman still, but the reality is they've got like 6 years, 7 years left on their contract.
Yeah, you're right.
And, I mean, it's just impossible to move them. So now, you know, those are the staples of your team. And, you know, then think about some of the other key guys. You know, Koivu is not a younger player. Staal is not a younger player. So now you're looking at, what did I mention there? Four guys that are in their mid-30s that are the staples of your group. And then you have some okay young players behind them, but I'd hate to think of what the Minnesota Wild situation would have been over the last couple of years if they weren't getting elite goaltending from Devan Dubnyk. So, I mean,
you're right.
They've got some decisions to make there in a number of areas. And, to me, I look at them as I like to call teams a 7-11 team. That's probably no better than 7th in the conference and no worse than 11th. And that's usually not a great place to be because you're not ever picking high enough to get those elite players to help your team.
Right. We'll see what happens there. The other thing was JD. Daniel sent me a tweet that says, I really enjoyed the JD interview on the K show. He actually came in studio, EJ, and was good to talk to him.
I saw that, yes.
And he said, what were my initial impressions after talking to him? And I don't know if you got the gist of this during the press conference or in your connections with him, but you know, he made it clear, Jim Dolan hired him and said, you're in charge. So I don't think he's got any plans to let anybody go. But as much as he's on board with what the Rangers are doing, I definitely got a sense that he's going to evaluate. He said he's going to evaluate. And if he doesn't like what he sees, I think he could make some changes. So I'm not saying that Jeff or Chris Drury or even David Quinn need to be nervous by any stretch because I think they've all done a great job. But the idea that he's just going to come in here and be a passenger on what is already a plan that's built in, no, he's been given the power that if he doesn't like what he sees, he can make some changes there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you take any job, right? You don't come in to be a steward unless the thing is already just running like a you know, like a top anyway, and you don't have to worry about anything. And it's not. They're in the midst of a rebuild. I think JD would really take a good hard look at the amateur scouting staff, for example. I mean, Gordy Clark has been there for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Gordy's an experienced veteran scout, but, I mean, they're in the middle of a rebuild right now. And, you know, they had a couple of important picks a couple of years back. They had Heedle and Anderson. They're happy with Heedle. They're not as happy with Anderson. Anderson was the hotter pick. You know, they haven't, you know, to be fair to that group, they haven't over many years, because the Rangers had a really good run of success when they were in the mix for long stretches of time. They didn't always have those high draft picks. So, but, you know, they've been there a long time. I mean, you could talk to them, and, you know, you could judge them on their decisions, you know, to pick Dylan McElrath, for example, you know, a player that, you know, really didn't pan out for the Rangers with a, you know, what was it, a top 10, 11, 12 pick in the draft, you know, many years ago. So, you know, I think that's an area where John Davidson will go in there and look at that amateur scouting group in Columbus. He had Jarmo Kekalainen. He brought him over from St. Louis. That's what Jarmo Kekalainen did. He was an amateur scouting guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, you know, I think he'll examine that area, you know, and I think he'll continue to monitor and kind of have a feeling on where he is with Jeff Gordon and Chris Drury. I get the sense that Chris Drury is being groomed to be the manager at some point in time down the road, but Jeff is not an older guy by any stretch.
No.
And I don't know if he's planning on going anywhere. So, you know, I'll be curious to see how it plays out internally with the Rangers behind the scenes. But, you know, John Davidson didn't come here just to, you know, to sit in the booth with Sam and, you know, oh, baby. I mean, you know.
No. He's serious about this.
He's here to try to win a championship. And, you know, he's been in St. Louis. He's been in Columbus. Those franchises during his tenure there, they were, you know, in St. Louis, he got there at a tough time. They got better as time went on. In Columbus, it was similar. But the reality is there wasn't a great deal of postseason success in either place during his tenure. So, you know, he comes here now. It's a home of his for many, many years. They're in a complete rebuild right now. There's a lot to do. I'm sure that he's met people in his career, Donnie, that he likes and admires and likes working with. So I'm sure that at some point in time he's going to look at trying to bring some of those people in to help him with this situation in New York.
World Championships going on. Big win for Canada over Switzerland. They scored a goal with 0.4 seconds to go in regulation. Yeah. Damon Severson gets that. They win the game in overtime. And Victor wants to know, can you ever remember a goal that late in the NHL playoffs? And I can't. Not 0.4 seconds.
Yeah, I'd have to. I'm sure there has been one, but I'd have to really go back and start to think about it.
Well, how much was Zalapukin 1.7? Well, how much time was left when Zalapukin scored in Game 7?
I thought it was like 6 seconds.
Yeah,
that game. But I could be wrong. I mean, it's a long time ago, and my memory isn't quite as good as it used to be. But there wasn't a lot of time left in that one. And you know, like I said, I'm sure it has happened. And but it doesn't happen often, and that was, I was watching that as we were having our meeting. It was on, and to see, I mean, I literally thought the clock had expired. I just didn't think there was enough time to get the puck from the point to the net and then off the pad, and it rolled in. But as you watch the replay, it was clear.
Yeah.
0.4 seconds left on the clock, so good for them.
It wasn't a playoff game, but do you remember when Gretzky was coaching the Coyotes and the Oilers scored? Like, there was a face-off with, like, 1.3. It was something ridiculous left on the clock, and they scored off the face-off. Do you remember that? I think that was...
I do not remember that.
Yeah, I just remember...
I do not remember that.
And yeah, there was... So there was, like, 1.2 left off the face-off.
The Zalapukin goal was 7.7 seconds.
Okay, so not even close.
Wow, I mean, we're late.
It's late, but
if you were a Ranger fan in the building that day, it might as well have been 0.1 second left.
But
you probably had like a dagger right through you.
I guess the point is that you knew there was time left on the clock the Severson goal. Like you said, it didn't. You know, there could have been question whether it crossed the line or not.
There was a game in August of this past year. I believe it was at the Ivan Hlinka tournament or at the U.S. Canada the World Championship it's like they have the tryout camps there. So it was in August. I'm not sure exactly which part of the event it was, but Canada and the U.S. played, and the NHL Network had the game on, and Canada the U.S. was winning and Canada scored, and I'm telling you, the goal was scored after the buzzer. And it appeared that it was scored after the buzzer, and there was no replay, you know, in that situation. Now, we're always talking about replay, right, being involved. And there was no replay, and the referee counted the goal.
Wow.
And Canada went on to win in overtime. And I felt bad for those kids because they're just young kids there. And that's like, some of those kids are many of those kids are never going to play in the National Hockey League. And, you know, here they're in a game against a rival as young men. And, you know, that kind of bad break happens to them. But, that was one that, it was after the buzzer had gone and then Canada still ended up getting the goal counted. And they think the game took place somewhere in British Columbia, so it might have been a little hometown help going on there, but it's crazy when goals are scored that late in games. Amazing.
Well, I want you to have a tremendous Memorial Day weekend. Try to enjoy it with the family. I guess you'll probably leave for Boston Sunday or maybe a little earlier.
Saturday evening, I'm headed to Boston. We're going to have our media day coverage on Sunday on the NHL Network, so we'll have the World Championship bronze and gold medal games, and then we'll also have our coverage from Boston of Media Day, and then we will get ready for game number one on Monday. And if the Boston Bruins haven't forgotten to play hockey in the last 2 weeks, they'll be ready to go.
All right, so I'll check in with you and see what your situation is.
Just check in on me, and I'll tell you what my situation is. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, because
I would tell you here another little odd side note. The last time the Bruins were in the final, it was 2013 against the Chicago Blackhawks, and they got beaten by a man in goal for the Hawks wearing number 50. And now in this tournament, they're playing again against the goaltender wearing the number 50.
Uh-oh.
We'll see if that same irrelevant trivia becomes a factor in all.
Yeah, and then you talk about irrelevant trivia. I think this is the only time that the same two cities have faced in all four major sports
Yes. In
a championship. And the only reason we know that is you've got to go back to the Atlanta Hawks used to play in St. Louis.
That's right.
And they played the Celtics back in 61.
I don't know if it's ever really, well, the St. Louis Cardinals beat the Red Sox, I guess, in 46 and in 67. But other than that, I think the Boston teams have had the better of things in these playoffs. So we'll see how that holds out. But it's been a while, I think, since I would have probably 67 is the last time I think a St. Louis team defeated a Boston team in a playoff.
Well, when the Patriots beat the Rams for the Patriots' first Super Bowl with Tom Brady, was a classic. So all I'm looking for is give me a classic 7-game series, 7 overtimes. That's what I want. I'm biased for that. All right, I don't have a rooting interest, but I just want to see a great series.
What do you want to try to kill Doc Emmer? 7 overtimes?
The
poor guy.
No, believe me, he'd be fine.
Wow, Donnie, I have a
He would find a way. He'd find. They could have Tirico on standby. That's all you do.
Yeah. Well, there you go. See how smart you are. You already have a plan.
Well, right, because Kenny's doing Westwood, and then you're going to be with Mirzi on the international, right?
I am doing the sideline interviews.
Right.
So I'll just do a couple of interviews. Mirzi and Weeksy will be on the international. And Kenny had to jump in. I can tell you this. We got enough play-by-play guys there. I'm sure that if something happened to somebody, somebody could step in.
Oh.
So there's a number of those guys that are on the scene. But it should be a... I'm looking forward to it. It should be a really competitive series.
All right. Enjoy. We'll check in with you next week.
Hey, have a great weekend yourself. Hope you get some family time with the kids.
Yes.
And, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, buddy.
All right.
That's the great EJ Raddick. And as I said, he's going to be calling international. So if you're going to be overseas at all and you want to check in on the NHL Stanley Cup Final, EJ will be the ice rink reporter for the call with Steve Mirzi. Mirzi is what we call him. Kevin Weeks, on the analysis. Should be a lot of fun for everybody. Of course, NBC will have game one. NBC Sportsnet will have games two and three, and then NBC the rest of the way. CBC will have all the games up in Canada, and it all begins Monday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. All right, we'll be back with you again on Tuesday. Have a fabulous Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Enjoy the hockey coming up on Monday. We'll be back with you on Tuesday to recap game one of the Stanley Cup Final. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.